listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. It's Friday, so it's time for our national town hall meeting with a guy I think of as America's senator, Senator Bernie Sanders, although the good citizens of Vermont know that he works principally for them. Senator Sanders, welcome.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you. What's on your plate? What's on your mind?
Well, what's on my mind is, as I trust most people know, there's going to be a very important election on Tuesday. And that election will determine who controls the U.S. Senate and who controls the U.S. House and governor seats all over America. Obviously, as a senator from Vermont, I worry a lot about control over the Senate, which is now in Democratic hands and I hope remains in Democratic hands. And I just hope a couple of things. What the pundits tell us, Tom, is that if there is a low turnout, it may well be the case that there'll be a low turnout, Republicans will gain control over the Senate. If there is a higher turnout, the odds are the Democrats will do okay and probably retain control. I hope very much that people will come out and vote, no matter what their point of view is. I think it is an international embarrassment. If we fulfill what the pundits tell us will happen, is that 60% of the people will not vote and 80% of young people will not vote and 75-80% of low-income workers will not vote. I think it's hard to describe that system as a true democracy when so many people are not participating in it. And on top of that, what bothers me very, very much is there are some people who will vote and who will understand very much what is at stake here. And this is people like the Koch brothers and other billionaires. They think this election is very important. So you may have young people say, I don't have the time. I'm not going to vote. Meanwhile, the Koch brothers will spend some $400 million on this election because they think it's pretty important. They want to control the United States Senate and the United States House of Representatives. So I hope people, you know, think hard about what's going on in the country and how we can move forward. And I think, I hope very much they get out to vote. There was, in my view, in what disturbs me also about the current campaign is that we have enormous problems facing this country, which almost never get discussed at all. The entire Republican campaign seems to be that a candidate voted with Obama 95% of the time, vote him or out, vote her out, which is total nonsense. The issue is, how are we addressing the major issues facing our country? In fact, are we even discussing the major issues facing our country? The reality is that in today, as you and I chat about quite often, the most important domestic issue that we face is the middle class of the United States of America is disappearing. There was a study that just came out the other day from the Social Security Administration, and they report that last year, 39% of all American workers made less than $20,000 a year, and more than half made less than $30,000 a year. More than half made $30,000 a year. $30,000 is a tough income level to survive on with dignity. More than half of Americans made that little. Meanwhile, what we're also seeing is that some 95% of all new income being generated is going to the top 1%. So we're seeing a shrinking middle class. We're seeing more people living in poverty today than almost any time in American history. We're seeing young people who cannot afford to go to college or maybe are leaving college deeply in debt. We're seeing still, despite the modest gains of the Affordable Care Act, 40 million people having no health insurance at all, others paying high deductibles, high co-payments. We're seeing a world being severely impacted, and I know you've worked very hard on this issue with Leon DiCaprio, on climate change, and scientists telling us that we have a small window of opportunity to transform our energy system. And Tom, you tell me, are you hearing any discussion about these issues?
No, although we just yesterday released our third video narrated by Leonardo DiCaprio and me and written by me and a couple of other people. And it's over at greenworldrising.org, but it's the third one just came out yesterday.
Fantastic. But, and congratulations. But here we are in the middle of a campaign, and people can have differences of opinions. How do we address the obscene level of income and wealth inequality? That's what we should be debating. How do we create millions of decent-paying jobs rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure. Well, how do you do that? We should be debating that. How do we end the embarrassment of the United States having the highest rate of childhood poverty of any major country on earth? Should be debating that. Why is it that 40 years ago, people could go to great universities in America like the University of California? You know what tuition was 40 years ago in the University of California, Tom?
Free.
Free. Young people won't believe that, but it was true. It was free. City University of New York, free. State colleges all over Vermont and America, almost free. And yet now people can't afford to go. 30 years ago, we led the world in terms of the percentages of our people who graduated college. Today, we're in 12th place. What does that mean in a highly competitive global economy? Why is it that in Germany, Scandinavia, college education is free? In this country, it's unaffordable. Shouldn't we be debating that issue? How come we spend far more than any other people on earth per capita on healthcare, and yet our healthcare outcomes are not particularly good? Should we be debating that issue? So my concern is that we are running, there is a campaign out there which focuses primarily on 30-second TV ads, which do not address the real issues facing the American people, do not enable us to kind of have the debate that we need to have so that this country moves forward rather than continuing to move backward.
Yeah.
Now, last point that I want to make is that in one of the issues that I worry about is that if the Republicans gain control over the Senate, there's very little doubt in my mind that they will make an effort to cut Social Security. It was just a piece today in the Hill newspaper where Paul Ryan says, Paul Ryan is the chairman of the Budget Committee in the House, and he says very clearly that he wants to move forward with quote-unquote entitlement reforms. And I hope every listener out there or every viewer out there understands that when people talk about entitlement reform, what they are talking about are cuts in Social Security and Medicare. So at a time when so many of our people are struggling, at a time when the middle class is shrinking, what the Republicans would like to do is move aggressively to cut back on Social Security and Medicare. And that's what they did in their last budget. In the Ryan budget in the House, which was voted upon by the Republicans, they transformed Medicare from the program it is now into a voucher program. They didn't deal with Social Security, but I think this time around they want to take a bite out of the Social Security apple, which will probably mean a reduction in cost of living adjustments. As you know, just recently the Social Security Administration announced that there'll be a 1.7% increase for seniors and for disabled vets. To my mind, that is much too low, but it's based on a certain formula. The Republicans get their way, they will change that formula, and that 1.7 will in fact go down. So my message to folks is, A, let's get out and vote in large numbers. B, I understand, everybody understands, that there's a lot of disillusionment out there, there's a lot of demoralization. But the situation will not get better. It will get worse if we have the Republicans controlling the Senate and the House. And one of the issues that they will tackle and go after is cuts in Social Security and Medicare. They will go after cuts in nutrition programs and in education. And they will fight to give more tax breaks for the wealthiest people in this country who absolutely do not need them.
15 minutes past the hour, Senator Bernie Sanders with us for our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie. The senator will be taking your calls right after the break. You can check out his website at sanders.senate.gov. He also has a substantial presence over on Facebook and Twitter. Easy to track him down, put in Senator Sanders. We'll be right back with Senator Sanders.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You can also sign up for the Bernie Buzz, Bernie's newsletter, over at sanders.senate.gov. And welcome back, Ken, in Loveland, Colorado. You're on the air with Senator Sanders. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV, by the way, on DirecTV.
Yes, thank you for all you do, both of you. But I just would like to ask how he would please ask people in Colorado to vote. We have a full mail-in ballot. We all have our ballots. We can either drop them off And today's the last day to mail it in. And thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, Ken. In Colorado, Senator Mark Udall is running for re-election. And Mark is a lot more conservative than I am, I think it's fair to say. But I think he's a strong senator. And I hope very much that he gets reelected. And as Ken just said, in Colorado, that's one of the states where you have, unlike some other states, there is an effort there to increase voter turnout. And I think that in a democratic society, I would hope that folks remember that people fought and died to maintain American democracy. And I don't think it is too much to honor them, to honor the democratic heritage of this country, to cast a ballot and take it to the mailbox. I don't know that that's a super difficult effort. So I hope that people do vote in large numbers. The Colorado race is a very, very close race. And I would hope very much that Senator Udall is returned to office.
Wow. Today is the last day to return a ballot in Colorado. It's like things are kind of falling into place. Yesterday on Morning Edition on NPR, Mara Liasson, who is their national political correspondent, and I believe is a Republican. If she's not, she certainly leans that way. Basically trashed Udall's and said Cory Gardner has walked away from his personhood stuff and he's become a moderate. And it was basically an ad for Cory yesterday. And then today they did the same thing. They said, we're going to go into Colorado and interview a voter. And they interviewed a Republican who said, yep, I just sent in my ballot for Cory Gardner. And it was like 2 days in a row on NPR, and it played every single hour, both mornings, was a piece dissing.
Let me just reiterate one point. Obviously, you know, what happens in Colorado and who the senator from Colorado is important to the people of Colorado. But this election is important to the people in 50 states of this country and to every single American. Because whether or not people like Mark Udall win or lose, whether Kay Hagan in North Carolina wins or loses, whether Mark Begich in Alaska wins or loses, whether Jean Shaheen in New Hampshire wins or loses, that will depend to be that will make the issue of who controls the United States Senate. Every one of these races could be the pivotal role as to which party controls the Senate. People say, well, what difference does it make? It makes all of the difference in the world. If you are, for example, concerned about raising the minimum wage, if the Republicans gain control of the United States Senate, the chairman of the relevant committee that deals with minimum wage will be Lamar Alexander of Tennessee. By the way, not the most conservative of Republicans. Lamar's point of view is we should do away with the concept of minimum wage, let alone he opposes raising the minimum wage. If you are concerned about climate change, and Tom, I know how hard you're working on this issue.
Yeah.
The chairman of the Environmental Committee, which has oversight for climate change issues, will likely, I'm not sure, but I believe it will be Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma, who wrote a book last year calling climate change a hoax. So what happens in Colorado is not only important for Colorado, it is important for the entire country. Which party controls the United States Senate is, in fact, a very big deal.
There you go. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 20 minutes past the hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us, taking your calls in our national town hall meeting. George in Albert Lea, Minnesota. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Oh, hi, Senator Sanders. I've always wanted to ask you, you call yourself a socialist. Does that mean you believe in government ownership of, like, steel mills and airlines and railroads and stuff like that?
No. What it means, George, and thank you for the question, it means taking a hard look at countries where social democracy has, in fact, been very, very successful. And those are countries like Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Finland, who over the years have had social democratic countries. And this is what they have accomplished in those countries. What they have accomplished is that all people in those countries have health care as a right. So they go to the doctor whenever they want. And certainly in Denmark, there is no out-of-pocket expense. What they have accomplished is that higher education is free. So you go to college, you go to graduate school, you go to medical school, it is free. What they have accomplished in that country is bringing down childhood poverty to a level that is far, far, far lower than it is in the United States. Here in America, it's I think 18-19%. In those countries, it's 3 or 4%. And that is huge. That means that children, when they're born, have a lot better opportunity to get a good education and make it into the middle class. In countries like Denmark, the minimum wage is more than double of what it is here in the United States, and their middle class is a lot stronger. They have a lot less income and wealth inequality. So I think what my vision is to have a government not dominated by the billionaire class or corporate America, where so many of the members of Congress end up working day and night for the top 1% rather than working families, but a government which, in fact, is responsive to the needs of ordinary people. So I think what you're talking about, George, is a mixed economy. No one would suggest that in Denmark or Finland or Sweden, all of their industry is owned by the government. In some cases, some of it may be. But you want an economy in which ordinary people have a fair shake, which is not simply dominated by the top 1%.
Rudy in Riverside, Illinois. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yeah. Senator Sanders, are there enough righteous persons in the Congress and the Senate to legislate Citizens United out of existence? The billionaire Republican running in Illinois for governor will seek to eliminate senior citizens' free property tax benefit. We must put an end to these people somehow. And we knew a new Magna Carta, like the nobility, removed Prince John.
Well, Rudy, good question. Many people may not know it because it did not get a whole lot of attention. But in terms of the question that Rudy is asking, which is a enormously important issue, in fact, probably the most important domestic issue that we face, and that is, do we continue to have a political process given to us by a 5-4 Supreme Court vote on Citizens United, which enables corporations and billionaires to spend as much money as they want on elections? And Rudy says, are there enough, quote unquote, righteous souls in the Congress to overturn that? Well, what I could tell you, Rudy, is that when Congress was about to leave for the election break, there was a vote on this issue on the floor of the Senate. And every member of the Democratic caucus voted to proceed for a constitutional amendment which would overturn Citizens United and allow the federal government, now Congress and states and municipalities, to impose campaign finance limitations. Unfortunately, to the best of my memory, we did not get in the Senate one Republican to support us. So to answer your question, I think right now the Republicans not only support Citizens United, they want to go further. If you talk to the chairman of the Republican Party today, Mr. Priebus, what he will tell you is that he wants to remove all campaign finance restrictions, meaning that billionaires like the Koch brothers can hand checks directly to candidates all over this country, which essentially means they will own those candidates. They will be employees of the Koch brothers. So they want to go even further than Citizens United. But I agree with Rudy that we have got to overturn Citizens United, and we've got to rally the American people to do that.
Okay. Ann, listening to KBAI in Bellingham, Washington, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate both you, Tom, and Senator Sanders. He kind of hit on what I was going to say, but I am appalled at the Supreme Court all the way down to the county courts. I just find them to be corrupt, and I what can we do about it?
Well, I am, you know, not familiar with decisions made by county courts around the country, but I am familiar with decisions made by the United States Supreme Court. And what should upset every American is if you think back to the Gore-Bush election, a Supreme Court decision was made in a very political way, I think it was a terrible decision, which gave the election to George W. Bush. And then 4 years ago, We had a Supreme Court decision, again, by a 5-4 vote, which essentially allowed billionaires to spend as much money as they want in elections, something supported and pushed by the Republican Party. So I think, Ann, what you have right now is an extremely politicized court. And I would contrast that, and this wasn't my observation, but somebody pointed out that back in 1954, when there was an extraordinarily important Supreme Court decision called Brown versus Board of Education. Tom, you remember the significance of that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that was desegregated schools. You know what the decision, you know what the vote was on that?
It was unanimous, wasn't it?
9-0.
Yeah.
Because the Supreme Court understood that on a decision of that magnitude, they had to show the American people unanimity. It wasn't the 5-4 vote like on Citizens United.
There you go. Senator Bernie Sanders, we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Be sure to check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov, and go over to Facebook and plug his name in. Check out his Facebook page as well. We'll be back. Welcome back to the place where despair is not an option. Now get out there, get active. Tom Hartman with you. It is our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls in our national town hall meeting. And Daniel in Greensburg, Pennsylvania, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Tom, Senator Sanders. Thank you so much for what you both do. In 2010, the Republicans locked on to Speaker Pelosi, and they got her. Now they're locking on to Majority Leader Reid, and now they're going to try and get him. Why aren't we talking and bringing to the forefront the Boehner, the Speaker Boehner agenda, how the laws that he's tried to stop and how he essentially is not allowing us to stop China from cheating on trade? Senator Sanders, you know that the Democratic Senate supported legislation to make sure that the Chinese are held accountable, and it went to Boehner, and he did nothing. I mean, with the middle class, these races in Iowa and North Carolina, like, it's like this didn't happen or anything like right. that. Why aren't we, like, let these people know about it? And I really appreciate everything you guys do. Thank you so much.
Well, Daniel, thanks very much for your question, and you raised a very important issue. And that is, in my view, for a wide variety of reasons, having a lot to do with corporate control over the media. Most Americans do not only not know what's going on in terms of trade or sanctions against China, they don't know very much about anything. The irony of this, and let me just pick up on Daniel's point, one of the concerns that many Americans have is that over the last 14 or 15 years, we've lost some 60,000 factories in America. 60,000 factories in America. And that means millions of decent-paying jobs. And there are a number of reasons for the loss in manufacturing. But an important one is our disastrous trade policies. That's NAFTA, CAFTA, permanent normal trade relations with China, which has said to corporations in America, yeah, of course, you can shut down here in this country. You can throw millions of people out of work. Hey, you can go to China. You can pay people $1 an hour, and you can bring those products back in America. Of course. Why not? What's the problem? Now, to my mind, as someone who voted against all of these agreements, I think that's a disaster. But I think the point that Daniel is making is we don't discuss that issue. I want people to think 60,000 factories shut down in the last 15 years. How much discussion have you seen on television about our disastrous trade policy, which, by the way, is not just the fault of Republicans. Democrats were there, too. Corporate America wanted unfettered free trade with China. That's what we got. It's a disaster. But Daniel asked appropriately, how much discussion do we have? But it's not just unfettered free trade. It is important issue after important issue. How many people out there are going to go to the polls on Tuesday who believe not only that we should not cut Social Security, but we should expand Social Security, who are going to be voting for Republican candidates who want to cut Social Security, who want to cut Medicare? How many people know that? They don't. Because if you turn on the television, what you're going to hear is candidate X voted for Obama 238% of the time. But you don't know what these guys stand for. What do they want to do? And as I mentioned a moment ago, Paul Ryan, who is one of the influential Republicans in the House, chairman of their budget committee, says it. Today's paper, The Hill. Basically, what he is saying is that he wants to go after entitlement reforms. That is a code phrase for cutting Social Security and Medicare. So if you want to cut Social Security and Medicare, go ahead. That's fine. vote for Republican candidates. If you don't, you might want to think otherwise.
There you go. Barry in Sarasota, Florida. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Oh, hiya, Bernie. It's so nice to talk to the next president of the United States. First of all, I would like to say that I'm very dismayed that when I watch all the debates on C-SPAN, et cetera, that the Democratic candidates don't say anything what you're saying. I don't see Obama saying what you're saying. I don't see Democratic ads saying anything that you're saying. And you know, and the second point is people may not be voting because Obama promised to label GMOs. And what did he do? He didn't do it. Instead, he put Monsanto in charge of the FDA. So he broken promises make people not want to vote. And the third thing I just want to say is you talked about corporations controlling media. 55 years ago, corporations were controlling quiz shows. Do you remember the quiz show scandals?
Yep.
And that was a big deal in Congress. Well, now we have corporations controlling the media, preventing our democracy. Why don't we have investigations into that the way we did 55 years ago? So thank you for letting me air out my point.
And thank you for your very good and salient observations. Well, you know, I have to kind of agree with you. I think one of the reasons that the Democrats are struggling is they are by no means, with some exceptions out there, standing up and fighting vigorously for the rights of working families. They are too often on the defensive. They are too often running away from the need to take on the big money interest. And the answer and the reason for that is that too many campaign contributions for Democrats also come from big money interests. But I think, and what I would say to Barry is that if you talk to people in Vermont or all over this country, and you look at the polling, the interesting point is that the vast majority of the American people on most issues believe in a progressive agenda. Let me just give you a few examples. When you do a poll and you say to the American people, what's the most important issue facing you? Invariably, they say it is the economy and jobs. And then you say to them, do you think the federal government should invest in rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure and create millions of decent paying jobs? And what the people of this country say, yes, whether they're progressive, moderate, conservative, they understand we need to create decent paying jobs in America. And by rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure, roads, bridges, water systems, wastewater plants, rail, older schools, we make the country more productive. When you ask the American people, should we raise the minimum wage above the starvation wage of $7.25 an hour? You know what the American people say? Overwhelming. Yes, we've got to do it. When you ask the American people, should women continue to make 77 cents on the dollar compared to men workers? They say, no, we need pay equity. When you ask the American people, should we create a trade policy which protects the needs of workers rather than corporations? They say, yes, we should. When you ask the American people, should we deal with the obscene level of income and wealth inequality and ask the rich to stop paying their fair share of taxes? The American people say, yeah, we should. When you ask about global warming, the American people say, yes, we've got to move to energy efficiency and sustainable energy. So on all of these issues, by and large, the American people are pretty united. They want us to move forward, and it does disturb me, as the caller just indicated, that too many Democrats are not prepared to stand up and come forward with an agenda that speaks to the needs of the middle class and, in fact, is prepared to take on the oligarchy, which increasingly controls our political and economic life.
Charles in Opa-locka, Florida. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, good afternoon, Senator Sanders, and good afternoon, Tom.
Hey.
Love your show.
Thank you.
You know, this is a very serious election that's coming up right now. And to be honest with you, I'm kind of disappointed in the Democrats. I haven't heard anything the fuss that has to be made about the Republicans shutting down the House. I mean, shutting down the government. You know, they shut down the government. We had a sequester. The sequester actually has helped as far as starting this debate that the president and this administration has taken the lead with the CDC on funding these hospitals with, you know, the proper direction on taking care of this crisis with the Ebola. And let's not forget, once they took the funding from the CDC, there wasn't a, you know, there's some things that the CDC can't, you know, and once they did that, you know, they've started up a phony debate that we're not actually.
So, Charles, what's the question for Senator Sanders?
Well, the question is, why aren't the Democrats talking about these issues more?
There you go.
Right, Charles, I think that's the question.
Yeah, Charles is gone.
Well, you know, it's the same question in a sense that I think was Barry just asked a moment ago. And I agree that, in fact, to a significant degree, the Democrats have really not held the Republican record accountable. And these are guys who said, well, unless you end the Affordable Care Act, we're going to shut down the government. We don't care. Oh, well, the Affordable Care Act has provided health insurance for some 10 million more people, 10 million more Americans. Well, we don't care about that. We're going to shut down the government unless you repeal that, unless you cut programs that should not be cut. I think, you know, what the Republicans have successfully done, and there are a lot of reasons why they've been able to accomplish that in this campaign, is run away from their record. What do the Republicans propose to do about tax reform? Well, their goal is to give more tax breaks for the wealthy and large corporations. That's what they propose to do. So most Americans think that is a good idea. What do they propose to do about strengthening Social Security and expanding it? Well, they want to cut Social Security benefits. What do they want to do about Medicare? They want to end Medicare as we know it and convert it into a voucher program, which will give seniors a check for perhaps $8,000 to then go out to a private insurance company to get the care they need, which, if you're sick, will be virtually useless. So it is important, as Charles talks about, to demand that the Republicans tell us what they want to do rather than just attacking Obama all of the time.
We'll be back with more of your calls for Bernie in our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour here on the Tom Hartman Program, 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And be sure to check out Bernie's website, Sanders.Senate.gov. You can sign up for the Bernie Buzz. You can also check out his Facebook page. And welcome back, Jim, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV in Lockport, Illinois. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Senator Sanders, how are you?
Good.
My question to you is this. You know, with all the campaigning going on, I'm a little bit dismayed why the Democrats haven't been out there touting the 55 months of private sector job growth. Now, do people in this country really want to go back to the recession?
Well, Jim, that's a great question, and I think you're right again. You know, what we're hearing here, Tom, from a number of callers,
it's a theme.
Is disappointment in the Democratic campaign.
Yeah.
And what Jim is saying is very important, and here's what it's about. Thanks for the question, Jim. Is the economy anywhere near where we want it to be today? And the answer is no, it's not. No one thinks that it is. Real unemployment is much, much too high. It's much higher than the official unemployment. Wages are much, much too low. Poverty is much too high. Wealth and income inequality is obscene. That's a fact. But what Jim says is, hey, okay, we're not where we are, where we want to be. Take a look at where we were 6 years ago. And let's take a look at where we were 6 years ago. Today, and Jim makes the point that there's been job growth for the last 55 months or so. It's been modest, that's true. But compare it to where we were when Bush left office, we were losing over 700,000 jobs a month. That is beyond belief. That is almost unprecedented in modern American history. 700,000 jobs a month. We were in the worst economic recession since the Great Depression of the 1930s. Even more frightening, the financial system in the United States and internationally was on the verge of collapse. I.e., you put your ATM card into, you put your credit card into an ATM machine, nothing comes out. You may not have a banking system because the Bush administration forgot to look at what was going on at Wall Street in terms of their recklessness and their greed and their illegal behavior. So the financial system was on the verge of collapse. Republicans worry about the deficit. Well, you know what? In Bush's last year, the deficit was $1.4 trillion. I believe that's the highest in American history. Today, it is well below half of that. We were in two wars 6 years ago where American combat troops were getting killed every week. They're not there now. So the point is, are we where we want to be in the economy today? Absolutely not. Do we need bold and aggressive actions to rebuild the crumbling middle class? Yes, we do. Should we criticize Obama for not being aggressive enough, for not standing up to the Republicans more forcefully? Yes, we should. But do you really want to go back to the trickle-down economic theories of Bush 6 years ago, which left this country on the verge of economic collapse, i.e., if the financial system went under? You're talking about perhaps the worst depression in modern world history. So I think Jim asked that question. And the Republicans, by the way, that is their philosophy. Their philosophy is trickle-down economic theory. What is good for the billionaires and what is good for large multinational corporations is presumably good for everybody. That is a false theory. That is quackery. So I would hope that we do not go back to the ideas that plunged this country into such serious problems 6 years ago.
George Herbert Walker Bush called it voodoo economics.
And George Herbert Walker Bush was absolutely correct.
Indeed. Senator Bernie Sanders with us answering your questions in our National Town Hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie. We'll be right back with more of your calls for Bernie. Minutes before the hour, defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you, and Senator Bernie Sanders on the line. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour, and Josh in Memphis, Tennessee. You are on the air, Senator Sanders. Thanks for listening to Sirius XM, Josh.
Thank you, Tom. How you doing, Senator Sanders?
Good.
This is my first time ever calling to your show, but I've been a listener for years.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask a question about the actual VA. I know you work with the VA, Mr. Sanders.
Yes.
I was a veteran of 9.5 years. I did 6 years active duty, and my mother got sick, so I joined the National Guard, and I came back to Memphis, and I continued to serve in the National Guard. Well, I had ailments when I got out, so I'm a disabled vet, and I was wondering, why does the VA separate your active time from your National Guard time, even though I didn't have any breaks? In service, they don't count it the same. I was trying to see, why is that?
That's a good question, Josh. are you having trouble getting into the VA right now?
I have, they look at some of my claims as being some from when I was active duty, and then some that I've been on several deployments overseas and in several
Well, Josh, depending upon your income today, you should be able to get into the VA. If you want to call my office, we can make a call to see what's going on. So just call my office in Washington, and we will see if we can help you straighten this out.
Okay.
Thank you very
Josh,
much.
Josh, thank you for the call. Chris in Las Vegas, Nevada. Hey, Chris, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hey, Senator Sanders, it's a pleasure to speak with you. Tom had reported earlier in the week that you had an insane rep, Jason Chavez. He was asking, why isn't President Obama, using the Surgeon General? That guy should be qualified to take care of this Ebola problem. And Tom had mentioned that, that Senate Republicans have been filibustering this Vivek Murphy guy. When are we going to change these insane Senate filibuster rules? And are you working to change this? I know Harry Reid kind of talked about it, but then backed away. I mean, because this is just insane. 51.
Okay, good question. Got it.
Yeah.
And the answer is we have changed the rules. Here's what, again, Tom, a lot of people don't understand. They got angry for Democrats, and sometimes for very good reasons, as we heard this afternoon. But sometimes people just don't know the way the Senate runs. Now, for example, people will be surprised to know that a majority of people in the United States Senate voted to raise the minimum wage, move toward overturning this disastrous Citizens United Supreme Court decisions, voted for pay equity for women workers, voted to do away with a variety of huge tax loopholes that large corporations enjoy, and many, many other important provisions. A majority of senators voted for that, but we can't pass it because the Republicans have filibustered, and require 60 votes for almost every major piece of legislation. They have used the filibuster hundreds and hundreds of times since Harry Reid has been majority leader. Now, the caller says, well, what about nominations, like for the Surgeon General? In fact, we did change the rules on that, and we went from 60 votes to majority vote. The result of that has been dozens and dozens and dozens of judges and nominees finally getting approved with majority vote rather than waiting forever to get 60 votes. The Republicans were filibustering virtually every nominee, no matter how relatively unimportant that nominee, you know, might be. So the rules were changed, and I hope we'll get more nominees appointed.
Donald in Chicago, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, hi. How are you doing there, Tom? Nice to talk to you, Senator Sanders. I got a question. If the Republicans take the Senate and they have the House and they go after Social Security, what could President Obama do? If anything, what will Hillary Clinton do if she gets elected? Won't she be like a lame duck president where nothing's going to be able to get done? Can we fight these people then?
Well, the president has a veto pen, and I would hope and expect that if the Republicans attempted to cut Social Security, he would veto it. But here's the problem, Donald. My Republican colleagues are not dumb, and they understand the legislative process pretty well. So what you can do is create a situation where you put cuts in Social Security, which is what I expect that they would do, in with other provisions, like the budget. So that if the president vetoes it, they will say, well, president is shutting down the government or putting in cuts to Social Security with other important provisions that the American people want. So you can come up with a legislative package that makes it difficult for the president to protect those people who need protecting. That's what my fear is. But mark my words, you know, and I certainly hope the Republicans do not gain control of the Senate. If they do, expect them to move aggressively to cut Social Security, to cut Medicare, to cut Medicaid, to give huge tax breaks to the wealthy and large corporations. That is their DNA. That has been what they have wanted to do for many years. If they gain control of the Senate, they'll be in a better position to do that.
Senator, just 1 minute left. Your final thoughts for the week?
Well, my final thoughts for the week is that I hope very much that in our democracy, which people fought and died to defend, the American people do not fulfill the predictions of the political scientists and the pundits who tell us that the majority of people are not going to vote, that the vast majority of young people are not going to vote, that the vast majority of low-income working people are not going to vote. This is an enormously important election, and it is terribly important that people send in their ballots if they're voting by mail, or just make sure they get down to the polling booth on Tuesday. And I think if we do that, I think the results will be better than people are anticipating.
Yeah. And actually, there's some indications polling or the early voting indications look actually pretty good for the Democrats. We'll see where it goes.
Yes, we will.
Senator
we'll
Sanders.
That next week.
Indeed, we will. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Okay.
In all these years. Senator Bernie Sanders, be sure to check out his website at sanders.senate.gov. You can check out his Facebook page. Just plug Bernie Sanders into Facebook, and you will have it. We will be back with Anything Goes Friday right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer. maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. A couple of things I wanted to riff about, and then we'll get to your phone calls. Dave Rosenfeld of the OregonRightToKnow.org, by the way, is going to be with us in about 20 minutes, just for a brief time. But other than that, it's going to be just you and me the rest of the day. This is astonishing. From today's New York Times, it's titled, Why the U.S. Has Fallen Behind in Internet Speed and Affordability. You heard me yesterday complaining about Comcast. We've had, you know, they provide our internet service here for the show. And a couple of times over the last few days, we've had a whole bunch of calls drop and things just kind of crash because, you know, our internet service is not reliable. And it's been that way for a couple of years. And it's also very, very, very expensive. And you heard me complaining about AT&T earlier in the week, and I'm leaving there, and I'm going somewhere else on the way to somewhere else, and now they're basically punishing me by charging me $400 a month for my phone bill. It's as I'm waiting for a new phone to be delivered so I can change plans to a new company. It's absolutely bizarre. Well, here's I keep pointing out that, you know, and you will never hear a conversation, by the way, about these things, even on the liberal television network, because it's owned by Comcast. So this is just fundamentally wrong. I mean, this is oligopoly. This is monopoly or duopoly or triopoly. I mean, basically, wherever you are in the country. Well, in fact, here's Claire Kane Miller writing in today's New York Times. Says, downloading a high-def movie takes about 7 seconds in Seoul, Hong Kong, Tokyo, Zurich, Bucharest, and Paris. And people pay as little as $30 a month for their internet connection. They can download a high-definition movie in 7 seconds. In L.A., New York, and Washington, downloading that same movie takes 1.4 minutes. 7 seconds versus 1.4 minutes, which would be, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of what? 100 seconds? No, it would be about 80 seconds, 7 seconds versus 80 seconds. And not only that, with the fastest internet available, not only that, you pay $300 a month for the privilege in the United States instead of $30 a month in these other cities. Why is that? New America Foundation's Open Technology Institute has published a report on this. With the exception of cities like Chattanooga, Tennessee, where the city has put fiber optics into everybody's home, right? The city is running a super high-speed, super low-cost broadband system. With the exception of places like that, as Tim Wu, professor at Columbia Law School, says, it's very simple economics. The average market has one or two serious internet providers, and they set their prices at monopoly or duopoly pricing. Three-quarters of American homes have no competitive choice for the essential infrastructure for 21st century economics and democracy. That's what the head of the FCC said a few months ago. Now, there's a very simple solution to that. You know, why is it that in Seoul, Hong Kong, Tokyo, Zurich, Bucharest, and Paris, you pay $30 a month for an internet connection that's almost 10 times faster than the fastest you can buy in the United States for $300 a month? Why is that? Because in those countries, in most other countries of the world, the what would you call it? The access point, the pipe going into your house, whether it's a piece of cable, whether it's a piece of fiber, or whether it's a copper pair, the pipe coming into your, or whether it's coming off a cell phone tower, whatever it may be, however you're getting your internet, whoever has that infrastructure. Say Verizon ran the Wi-Fi to your home, okay, or ran the cable into your home, and you're getting your internet through that. If this was, now this being the United States, Verizon can say to anybody else, you can't offer internet service through our piece of cable. But in all these other countries, if the cost to deliver internet service from downtown Washington, D.C. to my house, to my residence, if that cost was, say, $10 a month, which it probably is in that neighborhood, then internet service providers other than Verizon, say Verizon was providing, well, it's Comcast. Comcast is providing, say, let's say it costs $10 a month. Then other companies would be able to come to Comcast and say, we would like to supply Hartman's internet to him. And we will pay you, Comcast, the cost of delivering this, $10 a month. And we'll charge him $30 a month and we'll make a profit. And we will compete with you, Comcast. And what that does is it drives the prices from $300 a month for the highest internet speeds down to $30 a month, like it is in Japan, like it is in Hong Kong, like it is in most of the European countries. Because they all say, just because you own the pipe doesn't mean you can establish a monopoly. You have to rent space in these essentially what are essentially natural monopolies. You have to rent space. This is not radical economics or radical anything unless you try to have this conversation with somebody in the United States. You will not hear this debate on American television, by and large. You will not hear this debate on the vast majority of American radio because it's right-wing radio. But this is, I mean, this is straightforward stuff. There's nothing secret about this. Okay, over at Democratic Underground, secretly taped, hard-nosed advice from veteran energy lobbyist, win ugly or lose pretty. This is from a piece that was published over at the New York Times. Executives of the Western Energy Alliance had a speech taped, right? So these were basically executives and lobbyists for the fossil fuel industry. And what they said, and I quote, I get up every morning, this is Mr. Berman in his speech to the Western Energy Alliance, I get up every morning and I try to figure out how to screw with the labor unions. I'm just trying to figure out how I'm going to reduce their brand. He repeatedly boasted about how he could take checks from the oil and gas industry executives, according to the New York Times. He said he had already collected some six-figure contributions from some of the executives in the room and then hide their role in financing the campaigns. He said, people always ask me one question all the time. How do I know that I won't be found out as a supporter of what you're doing? He said, we run all this stuff through nonprofit organizations that are insulated from having to disclose donors. There is total anonymity. People don't know who supports us. Are you getting this? I mean, it's some truly astonishing stuff. Okay, meanwhile, in the United Kingdom, a court in the United Kingdom, the High Court, right, their Supreme Court basically, has ruled that a Libyan man who was illegally sent to Libya and tortured, in other words, this was illegal, you know, rendition and torture, something George Bush did aggressively and his poodle, Tony Blair, did. That this Libyan guy can sue the UK government. Why aren't we doing that in the United States? And secondly, here's a piece from BBC News. This is BBC News. They're talking about all these politicians in the United States who are probably going to win their re-election, even though they're guilty of all kinds of awful stuff. Michael Grimm in New York, a New York Republican, he was indicted on 20 criminal charges. Prosecutors accused him of concealing more than $1 million. He threatened to throw a reporter off a balcony. He's ahead in the race, 44-40. In Tennessee, pro-life Dr. Scott DeJarlis was recorded pressuring a former patient with whom he had an affair to terminate her pregnancy. He's accused of asking other women to seek abortions and reprimanded by the Tennessee Board of Medical Examiners for affairs with patients. His ex-wife has said he is violent and threatening. He's an odds-on favorite to win in the November election. Republican. Right? I mean, it's just, this is, It goes on and on. The BBC is reporting on this stuff. Did you hear NPR this morning kiss it up to Cory Gardner?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
2 days in a row on NPR's Morning Edition show. Yesterday it was Mara Liasson saying, oh, Cory Gardner's reinvented himself. This morning it was some Republican, yeah, I'm going to vote for the guy in Colorado. Right. 15 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Jeff in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hey, Jeff, what's up? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network.
Hey, thanks, Tom. Been listening for a long time. I was going to ask Mr. Sanders about a headline that was in the paper during the Israelis' assault on Gaza. It says, U.S. Senate unanimously passed resolution supporting Israeli assault on Gaza. No dissenting vote was cast, and no mention was made of the hundreds of Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children, that have been killed by Israel in the past 10 days. And that was, this vote happened to take place on the same day that the invasion took place. And I was wondering where these so-called progressive Democrats are when a vote like this comes along and not one of them votes or abstains from voting or anything.
I don't know, Jeff. I honestly don't know. It's a tough one because Israel's an ally of ours, and there's a fairly strong pro-Israel lobby in the United States, both among Jewish citizens, but also among fundamentalist Christians. And I honestly don't know what the equation is for these guys, what they're thinking. And I'm not a peer of theirs. So, Mary in Spokane, Washington. Hey, Mary, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. This is Stonewall Mary again. I was trying to call in when you had the senator aboard, but I told him I didn't care if he got kicked off because what I had to say I felt was so pertinent, even if he was gone at the time. And that is, not many people bother to realize that there isn't really much difference between a person that's committed a crime like a felon and a person on Social Security. Both of us, both people are stuck in a room. Both people have no right to own a gun, because if a person on disability owns a gun, it's considered an asset. You're supposed to sell all assets or you can lose all your benefits. If they even know that you have a wood shop, they can come in and tell you to sell all your tools, and then they'll let you have your Social Security benefits. But the thing is the only difference between the two is a felon doesn't have a right to vote, but he has every right to prosper from your vote.
Well, wait a minute. Are you talking about Social Security disability? Because regular Social Security benefits come to anybody regardless of their net wealth. The Koch brothers are drawing Social Security, for goodness sake.
Yeah, I know. That's ridiculous. I'm on a disability. I worked 27 years in the construction field.
So disability is a whole different.
Over 10 years. By the time my case came to court, per se,
we got to turn up the volume on this one.
Lost because I hadn't paid in.
So Social Security is calculated differently, or the rules for eligibility are different, right?
Yes, it is. And what my big thing is, well, it doesn't with like elderly. I have so many elderly friends that I meet in the food line, because unfortunately, for every $1.50 or $5 that Social Security gives people in Washington State, they take away $10 in food stamps at the beginning of the year. At the same time, you get your benefits, so you never go up. You actually are behind $2 every year.
Right. Yeah, our social safety net in this country is all screwed up. It's got a million holes drilled in it by all these Republicans over the last four decades, and it needs considerable overhaul. On the other hand, I would not leave that to a Republican Congress. Mary, thank you for the call. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Dave Rosenfeld is on the line with us. He is the executive director of OSPIRG, which is the Oregon PIRG, Public Interest Research Group. Right, Dave?
That's right. Thanks for having me, Tom.
And you guys have a new website out called OregonRightToKnow.org. Tell us about this.
Well, OSPIRG is part of a big coalition of farmers and consumer groups and public health organizations working to pass here in Oregon a ballot measure 92, that would give consumers the right to know if their food is genetically engineered by putting a label on it.
And is that on the ballot?
That is on the ballot. People are voting right now here in Oregon because we are a vote-by-mail state.
Mm-hmm.
Ballots, people have until 8 p.m. on Tuesday to cast their ballot. And if the measure passes, it will it'll add a couple of extra words to existing food labels to inform consumers if their food is genetically engineered.
Have the big GMO companies and pharmaceutical companies and whatnot been in Oregon dumping tons of money into the election process like they did in California when California tried to pass a ballot measure like this?
I've been doing public interest work for over 20 years. It is breathtaking the degree to which out-of-state chemical companies, agribusinesses, and food conglomerates are coming into our state here to try to defeat Measure 92. They are spending over $20 million on their side, and it's literally made up of, and it's a total spending record. The previous record set by one side here in Oregon was a little over $12 million in 2007 when the tobacco industry came in and tried to kill a tax on tobacco to help fund health care for kids. Now Monsanto, Dow Chemical, DuPont, Coke, Pepsi, these are the largest, corporations on the planet, spending over $20 million, saturating our airwaves, flooding our mailboxes with basically a lot of propaganda to try to mislead voters and confuse the issue.
It's remarkable. So OregonRightToKnow.org is the place where people can learn more about this. How are you doing in the polls?
It's very close. We knew that right from the beginning. We know that people instinctually support and believe that they have the right to know what's in their food. We know that people, if you look at polls, believe that they want to know more about if their food is genetically engineered. We also know that the chemical companies and agribusinesses have enormous amounts of ability through their resources to confuse the issue. And so one thing that they've been out saying, to give you an example, is that the measure is riddled with exemptions and won't actually label food that's genetically engineered, which is totally, totally false. Most of the food that you find in the grocery store would be labeled under Measure 92, of course, because that's why we wrote the thing to begin with. And so they're out there confusing a lot of people. On our hand, however, we feel like we have a good chance of winning on Election Day because we have thousands and thousands of volunteers out knocking on doors, talking to people over the phone, stuffing envelopes. Our strategy is to counter all of the ads that the opposition is putting on TV through tons and tons of face-to-face and over-the-phone conversations, Oregonian to Oregonian. And as a result, the whole thing is neck and neck, and we're going into a big weekend where we're going to be out talking to tons and tons of people, and we have a really good shot at winning, and it's incredibly exciting.
That is great. Dave, thanks for dropping by, and thanks for sharing the story with us.
You bet. Thanks for the opportunity.
And everybody should get over to OregonRightToKnow.org. Obviously, if you're in Oregon, do it. But even if you're outside Oregon, you might want to put something like this on the ballot in 2 years in your own state. Dave, thank you. Back to Anything Goes Friday here. Chris in Darlington, South Carolina. Hey, Chris, what's on your mind today?
Oh, I had an idea for a way to counter Citizens United, maybe get the Supreme Court to reverse itself.
Okay.
Get an enterprising lawyer, he'd probably have to be on a different case, but to just bring in, several bricks of $10,000 and $100 bills, and when it's time for his oral arguments, just say, you said that cash is the same as speech. Well, here's $10,000 each worth of speech. I hope you consider my client's position.
Yeah, that's great. Actually, it'd probably have to be a couple $100,000 because that's basically what, Clarence Thomas, his wife made over $800,000. This is, kind of a backdoor way of passing money to Clarence Thomas, which he somehow failed to disclose. Eventually he coughed it up or came up with, told the truth about it, but only when he got called out on it. I mean, any other judge would go to jail for that.
The lawyer's got to be able to physically carry it.
Yeah, but I think $1 million is in $100 bills would fit in a good-sized suitcase. So.
Okay, 9 suitcases.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe Justice Roberts would get the point.
That kind of citizen theater, actually it should be in $1 bills, and it should be 100 suitcases. and each, and just pile it up, shrink wrap it, like they did when they took the money to Iraq and put it on pallets and bring it into the Supreme Court.
You've got to be able to put it in the room or it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
It's simple for the reporters.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. I remember back in the 70s when Larry Flint made his first $1 million, and he had the bank bring $1 million in small bills and stack it all around his desk, and he sat and put his feet up on the desk, his bare feet up on the desk, and for the reporters, and said, just wanted to show you it's still possible for a barefoot boy from Kentucky to make $1 million in America. That went viral really big. It's amazing what big piles of cash do for the press. Chris, good idea. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
We'll be back with more with your calls. Anything Goes Friday here right after this. Check out our new website, by the way, tomhartman.com. And the very, very liotriciously ugly, the good. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, at an event in New York Wednesday, the Rhode Island senator announced that he would soon introduce in Congress a bold plan to fight climate change, a carbon tax. As Whitehouse explained, the current lack of a carbon tax gives fossil fuel industry polluters a free ride. He said, by making carbon pollution free, we subsidize fossil fuel companies to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars annually. By making carbon pollution free, we fix the game, favoring polluters over newer and cleaner technologies that harvest the wind, sun, and waves. Corporate polluters, not bearing the costs of their products, are in effect cheating their competitors. Well said, Senator Whitehouse. It is definitely time to make the fossil fuel industry pay to take out its own trash. Good to see you're on the right side. The bad. Bob Beckel. Everyone is talking this week about a video that shows a young woman receiving hundreds of catcalls as she walks down the streets of New York City. And while the video, which was made by an anti-street harassment group, Hollaback, has sparked a nationwide conversation about sexism and catcalling, Fox so-called news host Bob Beckel had a different reaction. Check it out.
I just said she got 100 catcalls. Let me add 101. Damn, babe, you're a piece of woman.
Wow.
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, stay classy, Fox. Stay classy. And the very, very ugly Chris Christie. During an event Wednesday honoring the second anniversary of Hurricane Sandy, Christie was confronted by a protester angry about his handling of disaster relief for the 2012 storm. The New Jersey governor responded as only he can. Check it out.
Turn around, get your 15 minutes of fame, and then maybe take your jacket off, roll up your sleeves, and do something for the people of this state. So we'll see. Now listen, everybody. Good. And there's been 23 months since then when all you've been doing is flapping your mouth and not doing anything. So listen, you want to have the conversation later? I'm happy to have it, buddy. But until that time, sit down and shut up.
That is very, very ugly. Oh, and by the way, here's how you really handle a heckler. No? Okay. Oh. It's President Obama when Medea Benjamin interrupted him, and he said, you know, we really need to pay attention to that woman's voice. So, anyhow, welcome back. Shano brought in his... We live in a bunch of different places here. Shane and Danielle live in Maryland. Jim lives in Virginia. I live in D.C. So we compare notes. And... Shane got this thing from, it says, Maryland Department of Election Participation, looks all official, and then underneath it says that the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. This is AFSCME, the union that represents federal employees or government employees. And remember, I've been talking about this for a couple of days now, how back in 2006 in Michigan, a couple of researchers just pointed out to voters that whether or not they voted was a matter of public record. And what they found was that simply pointing that out, that everybody knew whether or not you voted, just pointing that out, increased voter participation 10 times better than any other kind of mailer that they could do. Which is why I think that we should have, I mean, you know, whitehouse.gov, whatever. I don't care where you do it. But let's put up a website and state by state that shows who voted and who didn't. And this way, A, you can see if your vote got counted. Because for literally millions of us this year, we will show up at the polls, we will vote, and our vote won't be counted because it will be challenged by a Republican. So you can tell whether your vote got counted. And there's that peer pressure thing of, hey, everybody knows who voted and who didn't. I'd rather not be known as a guy who didn't vote. So Shano got this thing that says, Dear Shane, thank you for voting in the 2012 general election. As a frequent voter, your ballot is essential to preserving our democracy. It is people like you that play, should be who plays, anyhow, who play a crucial role in electing representatives that will, and that should be who will move work to move our country forward. You know, when you talk about human beings, you use the word who, not the word that. This pet peeves 101, it's now starting to creep into the New York Times where they're saying, you know, John Smith, the man that went, you know, no, it's the man who went. His. Anyway, your strong voting record is why we're writing you to remind you that Election Day is on Tuesday, November 4th. We expect high turnout this year and encourage you to join the millions of Americans who will vote this year. With so many critical issues facing our nation, we are seeing increased interest in this year's election. It's important to make a plan for how, where, and when you will vote. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact us at elections.askme.org. We look forward to talking with you after Election Day to hear about your voting experience. In other words, we're going to hold you accountable. Now, I realize some people think this is like right out of Nazi Germany. I think it's brilliant. And I think it's a good thing. And I think that, frankly, as I said, I think we should do this nationally. So that all said, Jan in Vancouver, Canada. Hey, Jan, thanks for listening to the program, watching us on live stream. What's up?
Hi, Tom. Well, thanks for taking my call. I'm a fairly new member of your audience, and I just want to make a comment about your recent remarks about the abolishment of tuition in Germany.
Right.
I live in Canada now, but I grew up in Germany, and the developments over there, I think, are all the more astonishing if you keep in mind that Germany has had conservative governments for most of its post-World War II history.
Yep.
So it's not just the government abolishing tuition fees, but it's actually conservative governments doing it.
Yeah, the Christian Democratic Party that Angela Merkel is heading up right now is basically like the U.S. Republican Party on the political spectrum.
But it should be, but that's actually the point why I'm calling. In Germany, I've always voted for the Christian Democrats, but here now that I live in North America, I mean, the German conservatives are so far to the left of the entire political spectrum in Canada and the U.S. that I, who considers himself a moderate conservative, I just, the party that I would like to vote for just doesn't exist here.
Yeah,
the agenda that I support just isn't out here. Yeah. So even the Democrats, even the U.S. Democrats are far, far to the right of the German conservatives. And my question to you would be, what happened to all the moderate conservatives in the Republican Party? Like, where did they go over the past, like, say, 10, 15 years when the U.S. Republicans have shifted to the right so much? And the second question would be, what about third-party politics like Senator Sanders?
Right.
I understand, like, people like Ralph Nader's argument that basically they are not taking away votes from anybody because nobody should take votes for granted, and any vote that a third-party candidate wins, you know, is rightfully theirs. However, isn't it also true that third-party candidates will kind of always take away votes more from the Democrats? So isn't, as much as I would support somebody like Ralph Nader or Bernie Sanders or, somebody else from that corner, like, wouldn't they, like, isn't it a hopeless vote, basically?
No. Yes and no. First of all, with regard to third-party voters, what Bernie has said is if he decides to run for president, he will run as a Democrat. In other words, he will try to get into the Democratic primary. And his goal in trying to get into the Democratic primary is, even if he doesn't win, to push all the other candidates to the left, which I think is an admirable and noble goal, and I absolutely support. In fact, I've got my Sanders Warren bumper sticker here. Put that back up. So,
yeah.
You know, and that said, the flip side of that is that in at least one race in the United States right now, I know that the Democratic Party is helping essentially a Libertarian candidate who is draining votes off a Republican candidate, because the third-party candidates, they don't just pull from the Democratic Party. They pull from whichever party is closest to them philosophically. So Greens will pull from the Democratic Party. Libertarians, Constitutional Party, those other, you know, kind of fringe right-wing parties, they pull from the Republicans. So, you know, the problem that Germany doesn't have, that America does have, is that we have first-past-the-post winner-take-all elections. Germany has proportional representation. If your party gets 20% of the vote, you get 20% of the seats in parliament. Here in the United States, if your party gets 20% of the vote, you get nothing. You get bupkis. So, you know, there's two ways to solve that. One is to go with proportional representation, which ain't going to happen tomorrow morning. And the other is with instant runoff voting, IRV, or ranked voting, as they call it in Australia, I believe. And that is happening in over 300 communities across the United States. The largest is San Francisco. It's been spreading across the country. The Green Party is the biggest advocate of it. And I think it's a great, marvelous thing. And it wakes up and shakes up both the Democratic and Republican Party, as well as empowers third parties. I mean, you had Gavin Newsom, one mayor of San Francisco, if I'm remembering correctly, on the Green Party. Maybe it was Los Angeles, wherever it was. Anyhow. Yeah, it was San Francisco. And so... you know, those are the two things. In answer to your question of where did the moderate conservatives go, they were pushed out by the billionaires. What happened was with the Reagan presidency, basically he opened the doors and said to the big multinational corporations, "We're going to let you get bigger. We're going to let you get more powerful." And the party basically is up for sale. And so these very, very wealthy guys came in, and anybody who doesn't dance to the tune of the fossil fuel industry, who are the major, you know, controllers, or the gun industry, the secondary controllers of the Republican Party, and now increasingly the anti-abortion wing, anybody who doesn't dance, although that's not big money, there's a lot of people there, but whoever doesn't dance to that tune is toast. And so it drove out the moderates. Jan, thank you for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's Anything Goes Friday, 15 minutes before the hour. Back with your calls right after this. Welcome back. Let me just duck, go Gavin Newsom here really quickly. And he's an American politician. He was Lieutenant Governor of California. 49th, doesn't say what his party is. I'm looking at four or five different. The Green Party was Matt Gonzalez. It wasn't Gavin Newsom. Yeah. Okay. All right. So I got the names wrong. My apologies. Back to your calls. Brian, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV in Matthews, North Carolina. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hey, Professor. How are you this afternoon?
I am well, thank you.
Great, great. I love our Fridays. I generally call them our hodgepodge or our kitchen sink Fridays.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you throw pie, always
I like
comes
it.
Out great. I was calling, number one, to touch upon the cable piece that you did. If you notice, as most people notice, at the bottom of your bills, you notice all these different fees and user fees that you have associated with every bill, and it's not always coming from the particular cable company. And you were right, because everyone else, they have to rent that space, i.e. the trunker cable, the pipe, or the infrastructure that it feeds through.
Right.
If anyone else wants to use that, they have to pay all those additional fees.
Right, but they can lock down that last, what's called the last mile, the wire into your house.
Right, right. That becomes like eminent domain, so people think that they own that. And I said, no, you're leasing that, paying for it.
Right.
Each and every month. The other piece I wanted to talk about was when I was speaking to your screener. I love her, by the way. She's always so nice and so considerate. Part of the problems that we have here, I was trying to get on with you and Bernie, part of the problems that we have regarding our political lack of knowledge is because we always deal with politics on a local level, and true, all politics are local, but we have to understand that globally it affects us, i.e. China, Russia, what have you. So when we get things that happens to us here,
we can always look at our local officials and say, hey, why is this happening? And then we complain on the, you know, on the local level. Part of the problem is our national elected leaders do things. They sell us out here to a tune of money. Everything is always about money. They sell us out here, and then we don't know. They hide their hands, and we don't know why this is happening to us on an economic level, war, what have you. Everything comes back to our shores. It's not happening in a vacuum. Someone created the problem, and it's always come back. So we have to be cognizant. We have to be conscious of everything that's going on globally. I've been saying it for 15 years. You cannot just think that it's happening here in just your state, your city, and it remains there. Someone brought it to your doorstep. That's all I want to say, Professor. You have a great weekend.
No, thank you. Thank you, Brian. Thank you very much. You know, I think you're absolutely right. And Americans need to get informed. And I think that if we had a national vote registry that everybody could access in a very, very simple web page and see whether or not their vote was counted, that's going to cause people to feel the peer pressure to go vote, which will increase voter participation. But it's also going to have a knock-on effect, a secondary effect, which is if I know that I now am going to vote because I don't want to be held accountable for not voting, I don't want to be shamed, essentially, for not voting, then I'm more likely to try to educate myself about the issues. Who are these candidates that I have to vote for? What are these things on the ballot? This is, you know, the astonishing ignorance of the American electorate can be cured by having people vote, right? If you're going to vote, you're going to find out what the heck you're voting for and about. I mean, it's simple stuff. So if we had a national registry where everybody could look state by state and say, oh, yeah, okay, it shows that my vote was counted. Cool. But my neighbor apparently didn't. 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We're going to, it's Anything Goes Friday. We're going to get back to your calls right after the top of the hour. So if you're on hold, just stick around. But right now, Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and free-don.org on the line with us. Hello, Victoria.
Boo.
Boo. Happy Halloween. It's always nice to see your smiling face.
I'm wearing bats.
You're wearing bats? Oh, on your earrings?
Yes.
Oh, how cool is that?
The whole earring is a bat.
Wow.
Yeah.
And they're real bats, aren't they?
Yeah, they're real bats. They fly away.
It is. For the people listening on radio, they're going, huh? Okay.
Yeah.
So what's going on in the world today?
Well, my first three stories actually have a theme. And the theme that links them together is surreptitiously obtained audio recordings.
Okay.
Each of these stories only is with us today because of surreptitiously obtained audio recordings. The first story is fascinating. It's a New York Times story. A veteran political lobbyist told the oil and gas industry in a speech, its consultant Richard Berman of the Washington-based firm Berman & Company in a speech to industry executives in June, that an industry executive taped because he didn't like what he was hearing, that if it wants to continually expand drilling operations, it must be ready to win ugly or lose pretty. He said, think of this as an endless war, and you have to budget for it, that you have to play dirty to win. He said, I get up every morning and I try to figure out how to screw with the labor unions. I'm just trying to figure out how I'm going to reduce their brand. And he said the industry will need to play on emotions of fear and anger and set it loose on green groups. He says executives must be willing to get dirty and dig up embarrassing information about environmentalists and liberal celebrities. He gave them advice on how to handle labor unions and animal rights groups as well. And it's really quite extraordinary stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's what's going on. I mean, this he was bragging about how some of the people in the room had written him six-figure checks.
That's right. And they wanted to be kept anonymous. And he assured them they would be.
Right.
So that's the first story. The second story is Senate Democrats today announced a hearing on the relationship between financial regulators and Wall Street giants like Goldman Sachs. Senate Banking Committee Chairman Tim Johnson, at least Banking Committee Chairman for now, Tim Johnson, Democrat of South Dakota, and Senator Sherrod Brown, Democrat of Ohio, said they're concerned about recordings obtained by ProPublica that seem to show cozy ties between regulators and industry officials. particularly the Federal Reserve Bank of New York and Goldman Sachs.
Oh, yeah, I remember when those tapes came out a week or two ago.
Yeah, deserve a full and thorough examination. And the tape recordings were from Carmen Segura, a former bank examiner for the New York Fed. The tape suggested that some of her fellow regulators had pushed back on her efforts to monitor Goldman Sachs, and Segura was fired from her job after 7 months.
Wow.
So that's interesting.
And the third one?
The third one is audio obtained by the Washington Free Beacon, which is Deputy National Security Advisor Ben Rhodes telling a meeting of progressive allies that a lasting nuclear deal with Iran is a White House priority on a par with President Obama's signature health care law, saying it's no small opportunity, it's a big deal. This is probably the biggest thing President Obama will do in his second term on foreign policy. This is health care for us, just to put it in context. He also talks about how the White House is looking to strike a deal that would not necessarily immediately require congressional approval. We're already kind of thinking through how do we structure a deal so we don't necessarily require legislative action right away, and there are ways to do that.
Who was it who was recorded saying this?
Ben Rhodes.
Ben Rhodes.
Deputy National Security Advisor.
Whoa. Well, I hope it's true, actually. I would, you know, we're talking, they're talking about structuring a constructive deal with Iran, right?
Yes, they want a constructive deal with Iran, exactly, like a two-step deal with Iran.
As opposed to a John McCain kind of deal where you just bomb, bomb, bomb.
Bomb, bomb, bomb Iran, exactly, yes. So that's, I think that's kind of interesting that there's so many, that good old audio still plays a role.
Yeah, amazing. What else is up in the world?
Well, a very interesting ruling by Virginia Beach Circuit Court Judge Stephen Frucci, who has ruled that the police can get your fingerprint, but not your password to unlock your smartphone. He says that a password is constitutionally protected individual knowledge, but a fingerprint is similar to giving a DNA or handwriting sample, which the law allows. And the question surfaced in the case of David Boust, who's charged with trying to strangle his girlfriend. And prosecutors argued that his cell phone might contain recordings of a fight between the couple, but Boust's attorney moved, and Frucci agreed, that the Fifth Amendment prohibited Boust from giving up his password.
Hmm. That's fascinating.
Yes.
So what does that mean for people who have the new phones that only use a thumbprint to or fingerprint to unlock them?
Well, I have one of those phones, and it gives you the option of using both. So, for example, on my phone, I'm using a different phone. I can either put my finger on that or I can use the passcode.
Uh-huh.
So if I wanted to get around his ruling, I would delete all my options for using my thumb or finger and only allow myself to get in through the passcode. That way, if his ruling stands up, the cops couldn't get me.
Right. The if his ruling stands up part is where it's going to get really difficult.
Well, this summer, the Supreme Court unanimously barred police from searching the cell phones of people they arrest without a warrant.
Right.
So that's something. But the FBI, very interestingly, has been having very quiet meetings with one of the House committees. I can't remember which one it is. I want to say Energy and Commerce, but I could be wrong. Because they are desperate to get around Apple's new encryption.
Huh.
That stops them from getting into smartphones.
All the more reason to buy an Apple right now. That and Tim Cook coming out as gay. That's amazing. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. We had Greg Palast on yesterday talking about this. They have purged 41,637,000 votes just in Virginia in the past few weeks. 41,637 people, mostly African-American and Hispanic, who show up at the polls in Virginia with their voter ID card, with their voter registration card, will not be allowed to vote. They will be told, sorry, you're not on the list, because you've already voted or you voted twice, when they haven't. Think Progress is now, this is their top story, thinkprogress.org. If you'd like to see it, it's pretty bizarre. It's pretty bizarre. Another headline over there, school district strips high school biology textbook of any mention of birth control or abortion. Bizarre. Anyway, back to your calls. Felons in Skaneateles, New York. How do you say your town?
Close, Skaneateles.
Skaneateles, okay. How are you? What's up? Thanks for listening to WNYY.
Thank you for everything you do. I love your show, and I recommend it to everyone I know. What I called to ask you about is jury nullification.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know, one, what is it? Two, what exactly does it do if invoked during a jury trial? And three, can one ask for and receive information about jury nullification during the jury selection process?
Okay. Jury nullification goes back to a premise that is found in very early American law, which is that the jury basically is the law, that whatever a jury decides, that's going to be what the case, that's how the case is, regardless of the law. So if you're on a jury, you have the right to say, you know, I think that this guy actually is guilty based on the law, but we're going to ignore the law because of circumstances that we think are exigent, you know, that are beyond the are greater than the law. We're going to ignore the law and find him not guilty. I don't think that that's a just law. If you got somebody who's been busted for smoking dope and you want to say, you know, I don't think it's right to send somebody for prison for this. So we, the jury, are going to say, he may well have been smoking dope, but we're not going to send him to jail for it. We find him not guilty. That's jury nullification. As a jury, you have, as a juror on a jury, you have the power, as does everybody else in the jury, to question witnesses, to question defendants, to question the lawyers or the judge, and to decide outside the framework of the very specific instructions provided to you by the judge. That's my understanding of jury nullification. Now, the problem with jury nullification is if you ask during the juror selection process, I understand I have, you know, can you explain to me what jury nullification is? Or just don't even use that phrase. Just say, is it true that as a juror, I can choose to ignore the law if I think it's an unjust law or I don't like the way that it's being enforced or I think it's being selectively enforced and rule in a way that's inconsistent with the jury instructions? And at that point, the persons, the lawyers and the judge doing the jury selection will have to say, yes, that's true, and they will kick everybody in the room who heard you say it out so that the jury will not be, quote, contaminated. And if a trial is already underway and you or anybody else tries to tell a juror, inform a juror that they have the right to essentially nullify the jury It's you're not nullifying the jury, really. This is juror supremacy. This is the jury taking, you know, its authority. But if somebody tells somebody on a jury that, in most states in the United States, and I think probably in every state in the United States, that's considered jury tampering, and you can go to jail for it. Make sense?
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really, really powerful thing that people who are on juries have. And so my and I'm going to have to get a lawyer on, you know, a prosecutor, somebody who deals with this kind of stuff and find out the nuance of how it's actually enforced. Because if you know about jury nullification and you don't disclose that because you're not specifically asked about it when they're asking you the questions to put you on a jury or not, and you end up on a jury and you go into the jury room and you tell the other members of the jury about jury nullification, is that considered jury tampering or not? And I believe in some states it is, in some states it's not. I honestly don't know, so I need to find out about that.
So is it the case that if one juror invokes jury nullification, what will they do? What happens?
Typically what the judge will do is declare a mistrial. He'll say that the jury has been contaminated, okay, and he's declaring a mistrial. And then the case gets tried all over again with a brand new a jury that has not been exposed to the concept of jury nullification.
So that's why they don't want you to know about it.
Yeah, they don't want you to know about it for two reasons. One, it actually gives, you know, it's true, and the jury has this kind of power. And B, when juries exercise this kind of power, they try to take the verdict away from the juries. And I don't know the current state of affairs with regard to jury nullification. It would be a really good one to dig into and find out more about. And I'm going to put that on the list here to talk with Louise and Sean about, you know, finding a guest who really understands this stuff, you know, criminal defense lawyer, and find out what the situation is. Okay.
And you think it's different from state to state, perhaps?
Well, yeah, I believe it is. I could be wrong though, and that's but you know. Typically, most cases are held are listened to in state courts where there are state or county impaneled juries or city impaneled juries, and the rules that have to do with the rules of evidence and for the juries and things like that, I'm quite sure vary from state to state because it has to do with that state's criminal code. Philon, thanks a lot for the call. Laura in Chicago. Hey, Laura, what's up? Earthquakes in Illinois, Laura? Laura is not there. Uh-oh. Let's hope this is not another Comcast crash. Steve in Phoenix, Arizona. Steve, can you hear me?
We're okay, Tom. Don't
okay,
worry
great.
About it. Okay,
great. Here. What's up?
Enjoyed your little piece on Larry Flint. It was real entertaining, that little anecdotal piece. And also a shout-out to your Lansing mayor, Virge Bernero. I really like his style. I'll tell you, I think he could go far.
I agree.
You betcha. You betcha. And going forward here, yeah, I'd like to just highlight some of Scott Walker's achievements back in my native Madison. You know, he's our governor back there for the present time. One of the biggest things he did, he turned down Medicaid expansion money. You know, that cost the state $210 million. Wisconsin, in the latest news that came out the last couple weeks, we're dead last in job creation in the Midwest. That's a great achievement. Number three, he turned down $800 million of high-speed rail money, and this would have been used to get the high-speed rail going between Madison and Milwaukee, and also would have been a key link in linking up Chicago, Milwaukee, Madison, and Minneapolis. And I got to say this, I hope the people back there take their voting seriously and realize what they're looking at this coming Tuesday.
And he did that. I mean, had he not done that, it would have created thousands of jobs, you know, in Wisconsin.
Oh,
you know.
Oh yeah, and moving forward into the 21st century, you know, this high speed rail, it would have been traveling at 110 miles an hour. That beats a lot of the stuff we've got now. And you know, look at all the lives that have been hurt by not taking the Medicaid money. It's just morally wrong, and it's horrible.
Yeah, Harvard University says this year 17,000 Americans are going to die who wouldn't have had to die because of the Republican-controlled states that are not expanding Medicare, and thus large percentage of their populations. In Texas, it's a quarter. I don't know what it is in Wisconsin. It's probably in the neighborhood of a fifth to a quarter of the population of the state does not have any health insurance whatsoever. And so they don't go to the doctor. And so when they've got a problem, they end up not knowing what the problem is until it's too late to really seriously do anything about it. Steve, thank you for the call. Excellent, excellent recital, recitation, or whatever the word is, of Scott Walker's crimes. Let's hope that the voters of Wisconsin hold him accountable. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
15 minutes past the hour. It's Anything Goes Friday. Our newest book, The Revolution of 1800, and before that, The Crash of 2016. You may find them interesting. And welcome back, Dan, in Tell City, Indiana. Hey, Dan, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. What's on your mind?
I wanted to inform people of the Social Security law change in 1983. Before 1938, the retirement age was 65, for 100% age, and 80% age would have been 62. And it changed every 2 months. It raised, it increased from 1938 through 1960, so that in 1960 it's 64 and 67, 80% and 100% respectively. Now every 2 months, like I said, increases. For example, in 1943 to 1954, the people born at that time, it'll be 63 and 67, and the 20% and the at six, if you retired at 62, your pay or whatever would decrease by 25%.
Right.
And as it increases, it's basically 6 2/3% after that from 63 through 66. Mm-hmm. But anybody after 1960 is 64 to 67, and that's 80% to 100%.
Right. So if you're born after 1960, then you don't qualify for full Social Security benefits until you're 67. Do I have that right?
Well, true, yes.
Huh. Amazing.
See, I was born in 1949, and my 80% age was 63, and my 100% age was 66.
Right.
So then, 66. Like I say, it's
So I've got to work beyond 65.
Not your age, too, I think. Huh?
I got to work beyond 65.
I think you was born probably.
I was born in 51.
Well, okay, so it's 63 and 66.
Yeah.
That's the you can find this on SocialSecurity.gov.
Yeah. Okay. Dan, thank you very much for the information. I appreciate it. Sue in Dravosburg, Pennsylvania, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network. Hey, Sue, what's up? Sue?
Hi, you got the wrong.
Oh, really? Who are you and where are you?
I'm Sue in Morgan, PA.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's close enough.
It's 15064, but
yeah. Sue, we have just a minute to the break. What's your question or comment?
Oh, I don't have a question or a comment. First of all, God bless you, family and staff. Thank you for what you do. Number two, let's just tell the truth. The Republicans, the Baxter gangsters, the Supreme Court with their ruling, their death panel.
Yeah.
They're killing us all. Let's just say it. They're a death panel.
They have no respect for human life.
We cannot live. They're making sure we cannot live, and they're going to continue to make sure we cannot live. Ebola is nothing compared to what they're doing.
I'm astounded that Charlene Dill has not been made into a campaign commercial. You know, this young woman who died in Florida simply because Rick Scott refused to expand Medicaid. She should be on every television in America right now, at least every television in a state that's controlled by Republicans. Sue, excellent point. Thank you very much for the call. And thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. Past the hour, Tom Hartman with you. Casey Hickox has been released from quarantine in Maine, a quarantine that lasted only a few hours by a second judge who voided the first judge's quarantine order, I guess is what you would call it. Very interesting. She just held a press conference. We'll get into that a little bit later on in the program. Right now, Pamela Smith is on the line with us. She is the president of Verified Voting, which advocates for transparent election processes and verifiable voting systems. verifiedvoting.org is the website. Pamela, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So tell us, what is the state of our vote right now, and what should people know as they possibly, you know, as they go into a voting place where they may be encountering a voting machine?
Right. So we still, as a nation, have not moved to 100% verifiable voting system. We still have a ways to go. We've made some progress, but some voters will be in jurisdictions where, when they go to vote, they're facing a voting system that does not give them clear proof of, you know, that the voting system was capturing their vote the way that they intended.
Right.
And those elections officials in those jurisdictions won't be able to do an audit or a legitimate recount to demonstrate that the system counted correctly.
Right. You're talking about the no paper trail touchscreen voting machines like they use in the entire state of Georgia.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Maryland and Louisiana and a number of other states.
Right.
But we have seen progress. You know, a state like Maryland, which is still using those machines, is planning to move to paper ballots. They just haven't done it yet.
Mm.
So it's in progress. And there are other states that have moved away from the machines and are moving to paper or have moved to paper. So more and more voters will enjoy being able to mark a physical ballot that, you know, they can check it and make sure that it includes the votes that they wanted it to include. And that ballot then serves as evidence of the voter's intent and can be used in any recount or any post-election audit to check that the systems are counting correctly.
Yeah.
So that's the plus. One thing that's important to think about, I think, in every election, regardless of what kind of voting system you face when you go to the polling place, do it. Go anyway. Because even if it's a, you know, completely paperless voting machine, you know, it could be working entirely correctly. And the one way to be sure your vote won't count is not to go.
Right.
So we urge people to go no matter what kind of voting system. If you're curious and you haven't been to your polling place recently, our website includes a map. We call it the Verifier, and it shows what every jurisdiction in the country is using for voting systems.
Mm-hmm.
And you can click on to your county, and you can click on to the type of voting machine that's listed there, and it will show you how it works.
Mm-hmm.
So you can learn more about it even before you go.
That's great. That is great. Verifiedvoting.org is the website.
Right.
Are there any particular areas that people should look out for, and are you getting reports of vote flipping?
Yes, we are. And they're concerning because, well, first of all, it's always concerning because no one wants to try and vote for candidate A and see candidate B's name light up. I mean, you just don't. And
right.
It's very disconcerting to a voter that sees that. As often as not, that's going to be a case where the calibration of the touchscreen itself is not working right. So that touchscreen can be recalibrated, and it can be done without, you know, sort of having to open up the machine. But when you go to vote, here's what's important. Make sure just use one hand. Don't touch the machine with your other hand while you're doing it, because that'll for sure send it off. But be patient. Go slowly, because sometimes a touchscreen, I don't know if you've ever experienced this when you're at an ATM, for example, it doesn't register your touch right away.
Mm.
And then if you touch it again, it's like, you know, register two touches
right.
in rapid succession, and you might end up moving beyond where you intended to, and it gets messy real quick. So be patient, go slowly, touch it once and wait and see if it registers your touch. And if you find yourself in a polling place and it looks like, you know, I'm trying as hard as I can to touch in the right place, but somebody else's name lights up, stop right there, tell the poll worker that you want to vote on a machine that is working. And they should be able to cancel out what you're doing and put you on a different machine that hopefully has better calibration. They should take that machine out of service, and they should recalibrate it before anyone else has to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to do that while you're in process, before you you know, struggle through it and try and hit the cast vote button. Because once you've cast your vote, you don't get to do a do-over.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to get the chance to vote on a machine that does seem to be working. Now, some of the reports we've heard, this vote flipping can happen on the candidate screen where you're making your selection in that particular contest, let's say for Senate. Or it can happen when you're getting close to the end of the ballot and you're looking at the summary screen. The summary screen shows the summary of everyone you voted for. So it'll just have the one name that you chose, or the yes or no for the propositions. And on that screen, sometimes we've seen cases where it seemed like it went okay when I was marking the Senate race, but then when I got to the last screen, it said a different name. And that's a different kind of vote flipping. And I think that's potentially more alarming because if it looked like it was working as you paid.
So that means that the software inside the computer, well, it is a computer, the voting machine is flipping your vote without you seeing it.
Yeah, and you may see it on that summary screen, and then you can try and correct it. You know, you get the chance to go back to that contest. But
right. This is when you call a poll worker and say, we've got a problem with this machine.
We have a problem. So that's a little more alarming. We heard some reports in Texas that was happening primarily when voters were trying to do straight party ticket voting. And you know, but we've heard both kinds of vote flipping from other areas, too.
Pam Smith, Pamela Smith, verifiedvoting.org is the website. Pamela, thank you so much for dropping by and for the great work you're doing.
You bet. Happy to be here. Thanks.
Thank you. It's 28 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back with Anything Goes Friday.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And you can drop into our live free chat room over at TomHartman.com. It's free. It's fun. It's the finest minds on earth. Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. I just, once again, I want to draw your attention to Claire Kane Miller's op-ed in today's New York Times. It's in the Upshot, which is one of their opinion piece columns. And it's titled, Why the U.S. Has Fallen Behind in Internet Speed and Affordability. And the answer to why is easily summarized. Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act in 1982, and the middle-sized companies all, you know, the little fish got eaten by the medium-sized fish, and the medium-sized fish got eaten by the big fish, and now there's nothing left but big fish. So there's no competition in our cell phone markets. There's no competition in our internet markets because they're all dominated by a small handful of companies. And so what costs $300 a month in the United States costs $30 a month in Korea, in Hong Kong, in Tokyo, in Japan, in Zurich, in Bucharest, in Paris, all over the world. We are the world's suckers. We pay more for pharmaceuticals than any other country in the world. We pay more for internet than pretty much any other country in the world. We pay more for cell phone service and telephone service than pretty much any other country in the world. We are the we pay more for banking than any other country in the world. We are the planet's suckers. And the Republicans want to keep it that way, by the way. Any attempt to change this, you know, net neutrality, opening up the pipes for competition, allowing the government to negotiate drug prices for Medicare, all of these things are opposed by the Republicans. They want to keep it this way because the people who fund the Republican Party are the billionaires and the giant transnational corporations, and they're funding the Republican Party. What can you say? Don't forget that when you vote, and please vote when you vote this weekend or Monday or Tuesday. Chris in Bellingham, Washington, listening on KBAI. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good. What's on your mind? Happy Friday.
Well, thanks. I got a couple of things. One is a meme that is pretty common. People always talk about the middle class and doing things for the middle class. And that's such a nebulous term that I think we really need to change that. We need to talk about it as the working class.
Right. I agree.
Because the 99%, we are workers. We make this country go. And the fact that our government, our vote, most of the Supreme Court, the press, are all pretty much owned by the corporations. There's one way that we can make them stop and take notice, and that is to organize and to withhold our work. Because when you take away their means of profit, they stand up and take notice.
Right. Yeah, and that's a good answer to the who are the job creators thing. If the workers refuse to work, if they go on strike, does the company make a profit? No. Where did that profit come from then? The workers. Excellent point, Chris. Thank you for calling and making it. Carl in Chicago. Hey, Carl, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
Welcome, Tim. I got too much to say. I don't know how I got to go real quick, okay?
Sure.
Real quick, you're on the Jury Nullification Act.
Mm-hmm.
That was touched on, I think, in a movie called Absence of Malice with Paul Newman and Sally Field.
Mm-hmm.
It was a wrongful death act, and Paul Newman, long story short, Paul Newman won the case. The jury awarded the it was a wrongful death thing. But when the foreman of the jury asked the judge, he said, are we restricted in any way to the award? Do we have to follow any guidelines or anything to you, how much money that we can award? The judge said, no, whatever you feel is just,
right,
you can go ahead and do. And that's what they did. And I think that was touching on exactly what you were talking about.
There was an episode of How to Get Away with Murder that dealt with this also. And I don't know when that played. I think it was earlier this year that I saw. That was all about jury nullification and what it was these people working for the defense team, and they were trying to figure out a way to get the word to a juror about jury nullification without going to jail for jury tampering. And it was kind of sketchy, but it was a very interesting insight into how those laws in that particular state were enforced. And I think it was the District of Columbia. I could be wrong. But,
can I touch on something else real quick?
Sure.
After the stock market crash of 29, Roosevelt got the smartest fox in a hen house to try to sit down and decide how to stabilize the stock market and how to stabilize the banks.
Right.
And he got Joe Kennedy to do it. And basically what he did was he instituted the SEC, and they initiated a rule called the uptick rule. And the other thing was the Glass-Steagall Act. The Glass-Steagall
right.
Act was the firewall that they had in banks. You can't commingle commercial loans with investment loans.
Right. In other words, you can't mix somebody's checking account with somebody else's gambling account.
Yeah. Your mortgage, your car payment, blah, blah, blah,
right.
versus the investors that are gambling money on some new products or whatever.
Right.
And Clinton, in 1999, with the urging of Robert Rubin, did away with the Glass-Steagall Act.
Well, Clinton didn't do that single-handedly. Phil Gramm led the charge. Phil Gramm was then a Republican senator from Texas. And I beg your pardon?
Graham Leach Bliley.
Yeah, Graham Leach Bliley was the name of the legislation, and Phil right. Gramm's wife, Wendy, had been the head of the agency that regulates commodity trading in the United States, and she loosened those rules, and then she left that agency and went to work for Enron, for Ken Lay. She was on the board of directors of Enron, and Ken Lay desperately wanted to be able to trade commodities, and he wanted to have his own bank because the banksters were starting to figure out the scam that he was up to with his 800 different companies, and he was basically running a giant Ponzi scheme at Enron. And so Graham Leach Bliley and the Commodity Futures Modernization Act, which came the following year, both put up by Phil Gramm in order to further the interests of Ken Lay and Enron. Both those pieces of legislation were signed into law, as you correctly point out, by Bill Clinton, and supported by people like Robert Rubin, and they were horrible mistakes, and we need to undo them.
And then the last thing, the uptick rule was the only other barrier to stop from shorting
right.
stocks, so you could short them down to nothing. The hedge funds lobbied over $100 million to get rid of the uptick rule, and that was turned over in spring of 2007. And what a coincidence, the crash began in 2008.
Well, the crash arguably began in 2007 with the
Correct.
Collapse of the housing market. But, yeah, it became obvious in 2008. You're absolutely right. Just a funny anecdote apropos of that. I was back in the 70s, Louise and I started this community for abused kids up in New Hampshire, which is now the Hunter School, hunterschool.org. And because our program at one therapeutic and healthy, whatever component of it was that it's a vegetarian natural foods diet. And Gloria Swanson, the incredibly famous movie star, has been a vegetarian, had been, she's dead now, had been a vegetarian since 1929. And so I approached her about being on our board, and she said yes. And so I used to go to New York twice a year when we were living up in New Hampshire and running that program, and Gloria and I would get together and have dinner in her apartment. We would cook for each other, you know, all kinds of vegetables, right? It was like corn on the cob and all kinds of – she loved corn on the cob. And we'd have these long conversations, and she told me the story of Joe Kennedy was her agent and her lover for a while, and he ripped her off, and she hated him with just a red-hot hatred or passion, let's say. And she said that because he ripped her off so badly, he took her money. But she said that Joe had told her that FDR selected him to be head of the Federal Election or the Federal, excuse me, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the brand new SEC, because he said, you know, it takes a crook to catch a crook. So I'm going to hire you, Joe.
Smartest fox in the hen house.
Yeah, there you go. Carl, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. Carol in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Carol, what's up?
Oh, hi. I have never called in before, so I'm a little bit nervous. But first of all, just a small correction. Coloradans can drop off their ballots through 7 p.m. on election night.
At a polling place, not at a post office.
Yes. Right. Yeah, right.
But if you're going to mail it, it's got
to mail. Yeah. And we can track our ballots through denvervotes.org, and that will show whether or not they've received your ballot. But I had heard a nice lady call in a couple days ago who was very strongly anti-abortion, and I feel that, you know, she was very idealistic, and that's kind of a Garden of Eden version, but because I think that the Supreme Court, through the law of unintended consequences, has mandated forced abortions by blocking access to the Hobby Lobby workers to contraception.
Right. So you have less contraception, you have more unwanted pregnancies.
Yes, and they will get pregnant, and because of either inability to deliver because they had a bad delivery or a chronic health condition, they will have to terminate the pregnancy.
Yeah.
That will actually start to grow. And so it is a mandate to forced abortions.
Yeah.
And we have our candidate running against Senator Udall here is Cory Gardner. He does have his name as a co-sponsor on a national bill, H.R. 1091. And I feel that if the Republicans take the Senate, they will pass a national personhood bill.
Yeah.
And
I think you're right, Carol. What astounds me is that 2 days in a row on Morning Edition, on the morning NPR program, Mara Liasson yesterday was pitching Cory Gardner how cool he is. He has changed his mind about abortion. He's just a moderate, you know. And then this morning they did a nice interview with a guy from Colorado who just voted for Cory Gardner. Isn't that incredible? Carol.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I think NPR is taking too much money from the right-wingers. We'll be back 15 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Todd, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV in Fullerton, California. Hey, Todd, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Hey, I was able to call my local paper out here, and they've agreed to publish that list. Of voters. I can
call
up our recorder's office and I can get a list of registered voters and voters registered voters who vote in this election.
Right.
So I can get that. That's public records. So I can get that. And the paper wants me to write an article about it and publish the name.
That is great. That's amazing.
Yeah, people call their local paper. They're looking for articles, and they're all trying to get people to vote and come up with ways, too. So
sure, and they're also trying to get people to buy newspapers. And if you give them content that is going to cause people to want to go, oh, really? My name's in the newspaper?
Right. So there you go.
Yeah. Okay, good on you, Todd. That's great news. Thank you for the call. Thanks for sharing that. Michael, watching Free Speech TV in Linwood, Washington. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I was just calling because I've been kind of disassociated from the politics for a while, but I'm tuning in again, and I'm starting to find out that all these spineless Democrats that are running for office are all disassociating themselves from the president, and I just need to understand what is it that they're distancing themselves so far from, and why are they so weak-kneed when it comes to standing firm on their beliefs?
I absolutely agree with you. The president's approval ratings are down because there has been a six-year sabotage campaign being run against his presidency by Republicans. He is taking the blame for what they should be blamed for. There is no honesty about this in our media. Our media is just playing the game, you know, oh, yeah, Republicans and Democrats, they all do it. No, I'm sorry, not the case. And if the Democrats would stand up for him and if they would speak out for him, then I think that they could embrace him, and they should embrace him, frankly, going into this election. He's accomplished a lot given what he's up against. And I don't get it either. I mean, I do get it. I understand that, you know, and all their advisors are like, you know, he's unpopular in the state. But that's, you know, it's like, I don't think that you run away from your president. I think that you're going to see some of the Democrats who would have nothing to do with President Obama in this election cycle. I think you're going to see some of them lose. And that's very unfortunate. I think it's directly because they're disavowing the president. Michael, thank you for the call. Sherry in Makaweo, Hawaii. We have just a minute, Sherry. It's yours.
Aloha, Tom.
Aloha.
We've gotten a moratorium on GMO experimentation on the ballot here in Hawaii.
Great.
Because thank you. Yeah, it's been a lot of work, but we are seeing lots of medical problems here, especially in the kids. They're spraying next to the elementary schools. They're poisons to develop these GMO seeds. 80% of the BT corn in the world comes from here. They're spending lots and lots of money against us, of course, to try and keep what they've got going. But we're seeing babies with their organs being on the outside of their bodies when they're born. So I'm asking people if they could donate, because they're spreading lies that people will be fined $50,000 and be put in jail.
What's the website, Sherry?
It's voteyesmaui.org.
VoteYesMaui, M-A-U-I, .org, right?
Uh-huh, .org, yes.
Okay, great. Sherry, thank you very much. We will promote that, too. Thank you. We'll be back. Hey, thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to our executive producer, Sean Taylor, our associate producers, Shane Farnan and Danielle Gilday, to our video director, Jim Vajavinsky, to our writer-researchers Andrew Campbell and Nate Sweet, to Alva Goldberg for video production, to our webmasters Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, to our business manager Ron Hartenbaum, to all the folks at the various organizations that syndicate this program, Westwood One, Pacifica Radio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Cable Radio Network, Free Speech TV, on Dish Network, DirecTV, and all the cable providers who carry our show from Comcast to Manhattan Neighborhood Network, to all the great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on The Big Picture, to the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn, to Netroots Radio, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, and the folks in our chat room, hey, to Ellen Ratner, Victoria Jones, Bob Ney, and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service, to Jacob and Tamboli for tech support, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and most importantly, to you. Thank you for supporting our program. Thank you for calling our sponsors. Thank you for calling the station or network or whatever it may be, however you are watching or listening to this program and letting them know that you are paying attention. It keeps us on the air. We really appreciate it, your feedback and your help. Jeff in Denver. Hey, Jeff, what's on your mind today?
You could lose me at any moment. My battery is beeping at me on my phone.
My apologies.
But anyway, calling about genetic GMO labeling in Colorado and Oregon, and actually in Maui, you might be able to help right now. You can call in still. If you go to their websites, righttoknowcolorado.org and Oregon Right to Know, they need people to phone in.
Okay.
You can phone in no matter where you are in the country.
Okay.
And on this matter, as Thomas Jefferson said, an educated citizenry is a vital requisite for our survival as a free people. Well, I created a video. It's posted on your the head of the members blog right now.
Oh, great.
It's called Freedom Requires Knowledge. And if anybody's on the fence about GMO labeling, I suggest you watch this. I mean, why would anybody be against us getting information that we can make an educated decision with?
Yeah, I'm with you.
We just need to know. That's the essential thing of freedom, is knowledge. You can't have freedom without knowledge.
Yep. And for folks in Hawaii, it's voteyesmaui.org. So, Jeff, thank you very much for that. And, we should have the right to know if there's GMOs in our food. Jerry in Long Island, New York. Hey, Jerry, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with the last call on with you. Yeah, I'd like to discuss, however, a different subject. I'd like to discuss the possibility of Republicans taking over control of the U.S. Senate. And I'd like to specifically discuss my fears about this. And my fears would be that, first of all, it would be terrible and politically dangerous for we, the American people, all of us who care about such things as Social Security and Medicare, and those of us who oppose both the Keystone Pipeline and the TPP. But I strongly disagree with this idea that it would encourage Republicans to want to impeach Obama because of several factors, which in addition to what happened to the last time Republicans tried to unsuccessfully remove a Democratic president from office, that was Bill Clinton, they fell short of enough votes to impeach him in the U.S. Senate, and they lost congressional seats in the House of Representatives as a result of the backlash against them overreaching like that against Bill Clinton. And so I think what's going to happen instead, and this is the real danger, I think that Republicans, instead of fighting with President Obama, they'll probably try to, and they might actually succeed in getting concessions from him on at least three or four or at least two or three main issues, ranging from Republicans sought changes to Medicare and Social Security, such as the chain CPI or means testing for Medicare or raising the eligibility age for Medicare. They might try to gain, and they might succeed in getting concessions from him on that. We might even hear the media chiming in saying, thinking that it's a great bipartisan idea to do so-called entitlement reform. And also on the issue of the Keystone Pipeline, we might see, if Republicans took over control of the U.S. Senate, we might see further attempts both on the part of Republicans and the media to push that idea of final approval of the Keystone Pipeline. And the Republicans are already on board with them with respect to the TPP, and if they took over control of the U.S. Senate, it would make it that much easier for that stupid free trade deal, the TPP, to get approved.
Oh, it wouldn't be just so much easier. It becomes a virtual certainty. And you can add to that the stripping from the president of the ability to appoint a genuine progressive to the Supreme Court during the next 2 years.
If somebody retires, I heard that all indications are that in all likelihood the most liberal justices would not retire, like Judge Ginsburg. But you're right on that count that the Republic, that Obama will have to appoint somebody more conservative just to get him or her confirmed through the U.S. Senate if the Republicans took over control of the U.S. Senate.
Yeah.
Although they might try to filibuster anyway.
All excellent points, Jerry. Thanks for calling and making them. Irene in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Irene, what's up?
Yes, hello, Tom. I wanted to first of all thank you for writing the crash of 2016. Although my husband and I are both disabled and go to food pantries, that was my birthday present and the one gift that I had received in several years, and I'm so grateful to have read it. I wish it was, you know, compulsory reading for all Americans.
Thank you, Irene.
What I wanted to speak to, there was another gentleman who had formerly lived in Madison, Wisconsin, and we're facing again this campaign,
right.
Railroad.
Irene, we have just about a half a minute here before the end of the show.
Wisconsinites should know that also there exists a lawsuit by the Spanish company that was to build all the train cars for the new line, which he refused. And we've already had to pay hundreds of thousands, and we'll probably end up paying millions to that Spanish company. And we lost 200 employee jobs in Milwaukee due to it.
Amazing. The damage that Scott Walker has done by promulgating his Republican ideology. Irene, thank you for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. And thank you for being with us this week. We'll be back Monday. It's going to get interesting over the next few days. It's going to get very interesting. The fate and future of the country and the world is quite literally in your hands. Be sure that you vote. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires your activity in addition to your vote. requires that you do something, right? Participate, show up, tag, you're it. See you Monday. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com. Your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.